All right, folks, welcome to the 2019 January podcast recording. I have the reassuring message that we're building a file, which is kind of the whole point here. So I'm going to kick this soccer ball right over to my partner in crime, Mr. Scott Mason.
Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to the Mike and Scotty Show. This is our debut for 1919 2019.
An inauspicious start, as
Yeah,
is.
well, as usual. I mean, we don't want to let anyone down.
We're
So
nothing if not reliable.
it's good to be back, and it's interesting to note that usually around the holidays things are pretty quiet.
Maybe for
People's
you.
focus. Yeah, well, people's focus turns away from the hobby and to holiday stuff, and we both did a lot of that, but we were both very busy for a number of different fronts. But you really kind of punched through the brick wall now, and you had your last operating session last Saturday, and went right into layout building mode. So I certainly want to hear the details of that.
Yeah, so far the plan has actually gone according to plan, and how often does that actually happen? There's so many variables that can happen around this time of year, not the least of which, you never know when you're going to come down with some plague or something, which kind of throws a monkey wrench into the works. And I wouldn't be speaking like that except that I had an extended visit from the family over the holidays, and they managed to come down with something that caused me to keep as much distance as possible while they were here. So I was nervous about that because the last thing you want to do is do an op session when you feel lousy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're hosting people. You just want to like sit in a corner under a blanket, but then you've got a whole house full of people, and this was a big op session, and the reason that it was kind of a key thing is that it was, I wanted to operate one more time before I started the process of relocating whole sections of the layout out into the new building, which, by the way, I'm declaring victory on for the most part. I think when we last spoke about it, just to digress just a little bit here. I was getting very nervous about the driveway paving, and the good news is it did finally get done, and they did a great job, but it was not without its own excitement, because even on that last day that they came to do the actual work, their truck broke down, full of hot asphalt out on the bridge. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I feel like we already talked about that, but if anybody wants more details, I can go on at some length. But it was just emblematic of the kinds of difficulties that I had for the past 2 months trying to get my driveway paved. Having that paved means I can easily bring people and materials in and out of the addition, and not having it paved was going to translate into really, I think, a half a year of mess out there. Exactly what I didn't want. So it was a great relief to get it done. The air conditioning guys came in and basically finished up. And when air conditioning season comes around, they'll come by to top off the gas and test things out for the first time and all that. But nobody's tearing down the ceiling panels to put up ducts anymore. You know what I mean? It's finally calmed down out there, So when everybody came by for the op session, by my standards, it was a pretty big op session. We have kind of a optimal number of people, but this session was different because there were people who couldn't make it last time that hadn't seen anything yet. And I wanted to see all these people and let them operate on the layout one more time and maybe get the benefit of anything they had to say, idea wise. So it was about, like I said, twice as many people as usually operate. And it definitely makes it a little bit more challenging. It's you've got the herding cats aspect of it, but my buddy Dave is very, very helpful in that regard, and I don't think I'd ever want to do an obsession with that many people if he couldn't attend, because it's kind of like too much for one guy to handle. You've got all those eyeballs staring at you that want to do something. You know, it's a lot to direct all at one time.
Well, it is, and you know from experience that regardless of how well the layout is running, there's always a problem or two that crop up, and your attention needs to go there, and you need someone to ride herd over the operation of the layout itself. And Dave does a great job at doing that. He's got obviously a tremendous amount of experience being a real railroader.
Yeah, a real retired railroader at this point, but I think he's just got a natural proclivity for it, and it allows me to be the sort of the road foreman, which is really, I think, more in my area of preference and certainly expertise. So the team just really works really well in that regard, so. I mean, Dave's been coming over here and being part of the whole layout experience for only about 30 years, so he's definitely got some skin in the game here,
Sure,
His opinion
absolutely.
weighs heavily, although I had to have a come to Jesus moment with him about Mehoopany and the addition. He keeps tossing out the idea of, if you just moved Mehoopany out into the new building, you could really do it right, and you could, these areas that are curved could be straight, and everything's. And I said to him, Dave, I will not live long enough to do that if I were to do that. There's just not enough years left in my life to even consider doing that. And I'm not
You
going
got
anywhere anytime soon, don't get me wrong, but there's just no way that I'm going to start a new war on a new front like that.
Yeah, you got to fight the battles you can win in this hobby.
Oh, absolutely.
Or otherwise, you're
Mehoopany's a
never going to get
finished
anywhere.
scene, you know what I mean? And yeah, it's a little more curved than it should be, and you have to tweak the track work because a lot of it's hand built, and I haven't really done any tweaking to it in over a year because I've had bigger fish to fry. So yeah, we've got a couple of little problems out there to solve, but there's nothing that warrants ripping it out. And I said to him, I said, "Do you realize what we went through just to do this pour of the water around this
Oh
whole
my God.
peninsula?" You know what I mean? So it's easy to say something would be a good idea in theory, but from the practical standpoint of what it would entail versus the gain that you would get is just way too low on the scale for me.
Yeah, the return on investment would be very, very minimal.
So
And
we ended up having the nice op session and really, great bunch of people. I mean, that's why these people are part of the crew because they're handpicked. And I know more nice people than I can reliably handle at an op session, which is kind of why I did two of them. You know what I mean? To try to get as many of them to run the layout with me one more time before we go into yet another unknown period of non-operation, So at the end of the session, we're kind of all standing around chatting, and basking in the warm afterglow of a nice op session, you know how it is. And Jim Reddington said to me, "So when do you think you'll start working on moving things around here?" And I said, "I don't know, what time is it?" It was a joke. It really was a joke. I was exhausted at that point, I think, and I didn't even go out to dinner with the folks. I just kind of wanted to chill a little bit. And everybody cleared out, and I went upstairs and, I don't know, answered a couple of emails or something. But I was just sitting there and I was thinking, huh, I should at least go look at it. And the next thing I'm running all of the last cars out of the staging yard and out of Pittston and out of Ransom, and I actually began the process that night, the same night of the big move. I started taking apart the approaches to Pittston Yard and all of that, and I was surprised at how much I got done actually. Of course, when you've been planning something for 2 years, you don't have to put much thought into what's next, you can just move right into it. And the next day on Sunday, I spent the whole afternoon doing preliminaries. and we took a lot more of the items out of there. My buddy Dave came back over, and we took ransom out of there and all of that, and basically got ready to move Pittston Yard, not Pittston Yard, the staging yard out into the new building. What we did on Sunday was take the lid off of the staging yard, Pittston Yard, by making a cut all the way across it and moving it out there in two pieces. In fact, for anybody on the Facebook group, that's what Scott's kind of standing in front of in the picture I took of him today and posted. That's Pittston Yard, just leaning up against the wall of my workshop, which used to be the front outside of that building and is now just another interior wall. So I woke up Monday morning with the solution to how I was going to move the yard. Because the original plan was to get like an all hands on deck kind of effort and try to get five people's schedules to jive to come back all the way down here and help us move the staging yard out. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought there's got to be a different way to do this. And there was a conversation I had with Dennis Drumheller when he was at the Op session, where he had some ideas about it, and we talked them through, and basically ended up not using any of those ideas, but it was a good technical engineering structured walkthrough of the issues to make sure that I hadn't overlooked something, so it was very useful. And during the course of that, I can't kind of realized that I could use the A-line carts that I use to store all of these boxes of cars and locomotives as sort of a rolling staging to move the yard. And then I thought, boy, if I pull this off right, I can do this with just like me, Dave, and maybe Karen steering, So on Monday, I got to work making up some little adapters that kind of fit between the joists that I mounted to the top edge of the A-line cart. They were only about 6 inches high, but it made it so that when we disconnected it from the wall, it didn't have very far to drop to get onto the cart. It's only maybe a half an inch. So that made for a very, very easy and smooth transition down. And I did it for four carts. And when Dave came over Monday night, that's exactly what we did. We took the rest of the screws out of the wall and just kind of gently shoved it down onto the carts, and there it was, on wheels, detached from the house. And I thought, we'll have this done in 10 minutes. And I had it all figured out. I was feeling pretty saucy about the whole thing, really, until we rolled it all the way down to make the bend. And we had it, hard up against where it couldn't go anymore, and we were about 6 inches short of space to make the turn. And it was just, there's nothing you could do. If we had, I think if we had six guys, maybe we could have picked it up and made the turn. We might also have broken it in half. You know what I mean? It just, it wasn't ideal, So, I went through all the stages of grief pretty quickly there, just like twirling the knob on the radio, and the next thing I know, I've got the Dremel out and I'm cutting the tracks on the curved piece, and we removed the curved corner from the big long section, brought that out there, and then we were able to roll the 16-foot long staging yard out there with no difficulties at that point. And
Well, you never know, you never find out how fragile it is until it breaks.
I had put a splice between, because each section is 8 feet long, your typical 1 by 1 by 4 length, and the ends of it are screwed together, and then I put a kind of a longitudinal splicer over the joint, but I couldn't do that on the other side because that's what was attached to the wall. And yeah, I was a little nervous about rough handling it. The whole idea is to not have to start from scratch creating a whole 8-track, 20-foot long staging yard, and if you mess up the track, it pretty much defeats the purpose there, So I was happy enough to cut that part of it off and get it out there pretty gently. And it's still there on the carts. In fact, again, for those on the Facebook group, in that picture, That's what those uprights are that are under the layout section that you see near Scott, and it's going to allow me to, if I need to jockey it a couple inches one way or the other, before I firmly establish exactly where it's going, that's I think that's a plus rather than have to drag something on legs around,
It's pretty ingenious because one of the discussions that we had, and unfortunately I couldn't stay more than a few minutes, but was you didn't really get a sense of how long that section of the layout was until you brought it into the new room.
Honestly, when we rolled it out there and got it into position, and I stepped back, like maybe into the opening between the addition and the basement, and I looked at it, it just blew my mind. It just looked so big out there. And then I looked back at the spot that it came out of, and I could not rationalize in my head that it came out of that spot that I had just taken out of. I would have, if you were doing the reverse, I would have said, no way is that going to fit there, So I don't really know what that tells me. It probably tells me that whatever I recreate in that spot, I'll have ample room to do it. You know what I mean? I think I'll have plenty of room
Yeah,
to do the
it's pretty
scene.
encouraging.
Yeah, in that regard.
I've got a few suggestions for you.
Oh, good. So you were thinking about it all the way home, weren't you?
I did, and actually, I've been thinking about it for a couple of days because I feel like my last contribution to the layout didn't go so well.
You got to stop beating yourself up about that. It went mostly good.
Mostly good.
Well, it did. It went mostly good. You know,
Yeah.
this is this. It's like horseshoes or hand grenades.
Right. So I came up with a couple of ideas that I think would work well in that space. But also, maybe for the if you like them, maybe they could be adopted to the overall layout.
I literally can't wait to hear what comes next.
So the first, I know you can't. The first would be to double deck the entire layout.
Oh, Dave's wanted to do that for 30 years.
Well, and see, here's where Dave and I part company because I'm certain that Dave wasn't thinking about making that double deck a narrow gauge railroad based on the Colorado Rockies.
Correct.
And I just think that the juxtaposition of the two, and oh, by the way, it would be an N scale. So, I think that the fact that they're just totally opposite things would lend so much interest. Not to mention confusion during an operating session.
You really spend too much time in the car, I think.
Well, that goes without saying. But I seriously think you should consider that. An NN3 layout on that top deck would just be outstanding.
I'll hand
The
lay
other
track, of course.
option really is just a complete seed change. And that would be to go to N scale altogether. And you brought up the point that the paper mill is on a curve. And really, all layouts are on a curve. It's just the nature of building a model railroad in the basement of a house.
That's why I picked a prototype that was on a curve.
Oh, there you go. If you went to N scale, or better yet, even Z scale, you could straighten out a lot of those curves. And just think of the time you'd save and scratch building these enormous buildings.
All right, then.
Moving right along. One of the best parts about the bench work that you've moved, and I'll just add my 2 cents, the two pieces that have been moved are huge. Was that I didn't have to get involved and do anything.
Yeah, it's great when that works out like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can guarantee that for the reinstallation of Pittston over the staging yard,
No, I'm, you
but
know.
that'll be a little far off here, but not as far maybe as you think. I
Well.
actually was actually communicating with my welder. I mean, everybody has a welder, right?
Of course, in their back pocket.
Yeah, I got people.
Well, Well, after that construction experience, you should have a lot of people.
Pretty much everybody that you would need. But the welder is kind of important because I'm going to have to build this very, very, very custom gate that's going to handle three tracks on two different levels. And you can build it out of wood, but really what I want is something that is rock solid, impervious to the changes of humidity that are part of our climate here, even with a dehumidifier. And I want something super rugged that people can just open and close, and you never have to worry about it getting out of alignment or anything. So it's going to start with a steel plate that I bolt to the concrete and uprights that are held at a 90-degree angle with the triangle bracing. And I'll handle any expansion on the land side of the bridge, if you will, with the interface between the bridge and the rest of the layout. I'll have an expansion joint there. But the area immediately on either side of the gate and on the gate itself, I'm going to use some scrap corian that I have as the sub roadbed, so that it'll just all be completely impervious to humidity changes.
Yep, I think that'll be a unique idea and something that should work great for you.
Yeah, but it occurred to me while I was talking to the welder that one of my next orders of business needs to be, I need to establish my ruling grade or level, if you will, for the staging yard. I mean, where it is right now is just a kind of a rough approximation, and I need to carry the level from the existing building out into the new building. And lacking a surveyor's transit, I've got to kind of do it seat of the pants method. You know what I mean? So that's like the first order of business, because that has to be pretty accurately established. So because the height of this thing is really the whole key, because the corian is going to go right on top of it.
Sure. Now, just getting back to, track work design and how it all transfers to bench work, how do you go about taking a drawing and transferring it to the layout? Do you use the bent stick method, or how does that work for you?
Well, I mean, that's a really a good question. I've often been guilty of doing things with a pencil that you really shouldn't try to do with a piece of track. So, to me, the scale drawing of the bench work as I've been laying it out in there, and you probably saw some of this, more of it happened after you left, but I'm literally transferring it from the diagram to the floor with tape, just so I can get a feel for it. And I've tried to walk within the aisles defined by the tape just to make sure that I'm not doing something that I don't want to do. It's like now's the time to come to that conclusion, not after I've actually started to put together bench work. So far so good. I think the floor plan is sound, and I've long maintained that you tend to build your bench work to what the room and the aisle necessity is, and then you try to get your layout to be the best thing you can do in that footprint. At least that's what makes sense to me. And I don't really even know how you would do it any other way, because the room is not really a fungible thing. It's sort of the thing that everything goes around. And if you've been to as many layouts as I have and operated on as many layouts as I have, you know that if you don't have decent size aisles, it really cuts into the enjoyment of operating the layout.
Sure.
Other than you, maybe none of us are getting any smaller either as we get older. So, you got to keep that in mind. And I'm trying to avoid as many duck unders as possible, like none. And you don't want that many bridges if you can avoid it, because each bridge is a potential problem point. And yet, almost everybody needs a bridge if it's an around the walls kind of a layout, because unless you parachute into the middle, you know,
Yeah.
you need a bridge someplace, right?
Right. Normally you're gonna have to duck under someplace, and
Right.
that's a little bit of a pain in the neck, again, especially as we get older. Not to mention the fact that, there's that risk factor to the layout.
Oh, sure.
You had that duck under the mainline bridge back in the an older version of the layout, and
Sure.
I guess I'd raise the question to you: how many times did someone stand up too quick and whack their back on the underside of that bridge and dislodge something?
Well, if you don't count the numerous times I did it myself,
Yeah.
the answer is still a lot, like way too many, you know. So that was an idea that was very much rejected for anything in the future, you know, layout wise. I played with all kinds of different possibilities for the aisles, but you know, you got an outside door, you've got to get through the room to get into the basement itself. You have to allow for maintenance and utility access. And when you have all of these different immovable objects, you pretty much come up with a, you know, one design that has the least number of warts on it. And I really tried every alternative I could conceive of, and I just kept coming back to, for the most part, the original aisle and benchwork layout, you know. So I think that's going to fly, and whether or not, you know, what ends up on that benchwork is exactly as designed is really another matter, and kind of brings me to your question, which was how do I go about doing that? I think that what I'm probably going to do is once I get the benchwork up, I'll put down some pieces of plywood, and I've got a lot of cardboard that I've been hoarding, and I'm going to start laying out some track on there, playing with the actual track and the actual turnouts, and just seeing how it's flowing. How does it seem? I might be pleasantly surprised, or I might not, you know. And until I start doing that, I don't have the full confidence that what I want to do is actually doable, you know. Turnouts in particular, you know, the flow of track into a turnout and out of a turnout, you can do things with a pencil and paper that you shouldn't do with track, you know. And until you actually start playing with the real stuff, or at least, you know, I'm not doing CAD here, you know what I mean? That's not really how I plan track. So that's something I'm anxious to get going on, because if I can feel good about the whole proof of concept aspect of that, then, you know, it's track laying time, you know, and not until.
So, I mean, it all sounds intriguing, and as you're describing the process, I kind of missed, doing that with my own layout, because as we talked about today, it's a very therapeutic, enjoyable process that gives tangible results.
Well, consider now, I've been thinking about this for 2 years, you know, what I'm now just about to start. So there is a little bit of pent up demand and excitement on my end, and I really wish that I could tell all my customers, you know, keep sending me the checks, but I'm going to be a little busy for the next year or so.
Business must continue. Now, the challenge in all this, and you touched on it a little bit, but I want to go back to it because I think that it's very difficult to do right, and in some cases it's impossible to do at all. And that's work within a defined space using commercial turnouts. Some people are better at it than others. You do a nice job with it, but there's always that one piece of track work that you can't get to flow in and out of a turnout no matter what you do. So I guess, given the fact that you've got a clean slate, is hand laying when needed off the table for you?
I think so. And I think in part because, the turnouts that I use, I've kind of switched over to nothing but Picos. And in fact, I just placed a large order today for even more of them because I figure, you know what, when I get going here, I want to make sure that I have lots of stuff in stock. And anything that I don't use as for construction, I should have no difficulty selling it off in the secondary market, So I really want to have way more turnouts than I think I will need, because my experience has shown that, the turnout that you think you're going to need for that spot, you might need an entirely different one. And I've got 5, 6 curved sevens and eights, and I'm not afraid to use them in any combination. I don't know if you can picture the mainline crossover that's on a curve right before East Yard at Mehoopany. Can you picture that at all?
Yes. Yep.
That crossover is done with two Picos, one curved and one conventional straight, believe it or not. So there's a lot of things you can do with commercial products, and when you're using a commercial product, you have no variables. In other words, it's a proven commodity. I mean, to me, the Achilles heel on any hand-built turnout is the throw bar. And a lot of people use soldered throw bars, and I've certainly got a lot of them. It's a maintenance item. You could never use one in a less accessible area. If you're going to hand build any turnout, it better be in an area where you can get to it for maintenance purposes. I've had perfectly good solder joints let go. There's all kinds of forces in play, and when you get again when you get the humidity expansion and contraction, there's a lot of force there. I've never really had a single instance with a Pico turnout where what's going on adjacent to it has caused it to deform or malfunction in any way. I've never had a broken throw bar on a Pico. They just work, you know what I mean? So that's for me a great incentive to want to use them. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't do things to them to get them to fit your application a little bit better. I mean, you can trim rails right back to the frog and get a different diverging route if you need to with any commercial turnout. So a lot of things you can do to them to get what you want. And because they have such a wonderful curved turnout, if you're trackside at all, especially in industrial situations, the prototype is not averse to using a curved turnout at all. They use them more than you think. And they do whatever is necessary to get it to flow. And that's kind of what we need to do too. Our buddy Confalone has been deforming microengineering turnouts for years. He'll take a regular straight turnout and make a semi-curved turnout out of it in order to get the flow that he's looking for. So if you know where to cut on a turnout, and that's basically not under the frog and not under the points, but everywhere else you can get some subtle curves into it and get it to do what you want. But again, part of what I'm doing by using the turnouts and the track to actually lay out the track, I can in some cases change what I'm doing so that it looks right with the commercial components and not box myself into a corner, you know?
And again, I think that comes from the experience of working with these things. What I like about the Peyco turnouts is that they're kind of bulletproof. Some of these commercial turnouts are so fragile.
Well, to me, that's a microengineering turnout. I mean, it's a really good-looking turnout,
Yeah.
and I don't know. I've used a lot of them. There's a lot of them on my layout. They're all over Laceyville and Towanda. But there's almost not one of them that I didn't have to do something to. Many of them come or came at one time with frogs that were too high. I had to take a mill file to every one of the frogs and get them level with the track. I mean, to me, that's just QC. You know what I mean? Inadequate QC.
Well, and again, you got, these things are made in a factory far, far away. And the people that are making them aren't necessarily even remotely concerned about what they're ever going to be used for, or, the importance of that QC. Their job is to do a certain number of these things every single day and get them boxed out and out the door.
Well, I guess I don't know this for certain, but I guess the Picos are literally made in England.
Yes, they are.
And they might be the only track, well, maybe Marklin's made in Europe too, but I mean, for North American prototype stuff, it might be the only thing not made in Asia. And whether that contributes to it or not, it's hard to say, but I think it's mostly the attitude of the company and their commitment to putting out something that's quality. I had one instance where I had a turnout where the little integrated spring just vanished. I have no idea what happened to it. It just vanished. And I don't know if that's because something got hung up on it, if the track cleaning car took it, or maybe it wasn't quite snapped in properly. It's the only Pico turnout that I've had that happen to. But when I looked to buy some more of the springs, there was no, I couldn't, you know, there's no SKU for it. You know what I mean? There's no, you couldn't, can't order it up. So just on a whim, I just emailed the company and I said, you know, here's the situation and I'd like to buy some replacement springs from you. And they wrote me back and said, what's your address? And they shipped me no charge international mail in like 2 days, a whole envelope full of replacement springs, no charge.
Interesting.
So, you know, they had me at hello, I think, you know.
Yeah, as soon as I had the track plan done on my layout, I placed an order for a couple of hundred Walther's Code 83 turnouts, which are Shinohara
Did
turnouts.
you say a couple of hundred?
Yeah.
This is for the old layout and the old
Yeah.
house?
Yep.
Wow. I hate, you
Yeah.
know, I have no idea how many turnouts are on my layout. I should probably count them. 200 sounds
I've
like a lot, but
well,
maybe it's not.
you'd be surprised,
Huh.
especially in a yard.
Right. And you have multiple yards, so yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Jeez.
And I can't tell you how often they broke.
I used to use those because at one time that's what you used, and they were a massive disappointment to me.
Yeah, I mean, they looked great.
Yep. But you know what? The curved ones, not so good.
No.
And it was the need for a decent curved turnout. I was whining about that on some list, and somebody said, you know, you should try the Picos. They have a really good curved turnout. And I did. I ordered one Pico curved turnout, put it in place, and it worked flawlessly. And I thought, gonna have to make room for this brand, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I should have known better because
I wish they made a
when
Code 70 product, you know, and I keep hearing rumors that they will offer that at some point, but for now, for North American prototype, it's strictly Code 83, which is mainly what I
yeah.
use anyway.
It's fine, and once it's weathered, I don't, yes, you can tell the difference. Do I think that the difference is worth going to an inferior turnout to get the look you want? No.
Nope. And you know what? People who are of that opinion, I've brought into the other room and I've said, I want you to show me what's a Code 83 turnout and what's a Code 70 turnout. Go ahead, take your time. And
Yeah.
they really do have a hard time because I usually, the way I do it is I take the 83 rail and file the rail down to the web and then solder the Code 70 rail right on top of it, which gives it the perfect height.
Yep.
And when you put that in place and you paint the rails and you ballast everything, you just don't see it for the most part. So I freely intermix Code 83 turnouts and Code 70 track. And you know what? So does the prototype in many cases. You see these weirdo rail joiners that they use to go from one code rail to the other. So, it's not something that I lose any sleep over. It's I just don't think it's something that you're going to see when you're looking at a detailed scene.
Well, the other piece too, Mike, is that, for anybody whose end game is operation, you've got to have track work in place that's going to withstand that process. And operation on your layout is a big deal. You've got multiple locomotive lashups,
Right.
which, just like the prototype, do put stress on the rail.
Sure. Especially the six axle units.
You've got long trains. So the first time a throw bar pops, or a rail slips out of place on a turnout, it's a mess.
Well, I've got a few issues at Mahoopany, and as people know, our buddy Jim Lincoln did a beautiful job building custom buildings, many many turnouts, and a beautiful crossing for me there, and it's all worked just great. But because of the way that we're holding the points, which was actually an idea that we stole from Tony Custer, where we were using at the time a micro slide switch, a double pull double throw slide switch, with a little hole drilled underneath the throw bar that the nub of the switch itself goes into. So we installed that under the throw bar, and the spring on the switch was to hold the points in position, and we were using the contacts to throw the polarity on the frog. Elegant idea, and it worked great in the beginning. But what I'm finding over time is these little micro switches just aren't up to the task, and they're not holding the points. So if you noticed any little pieces of tie kind of shoved in there to hold the points, that's why. And I really need to re-engineer that somehow in a way that I can do something different. I don't want to go with switch motors there. Mahoopany is very complicated, and I think, having done it both ways, I think when you are walking the ladder with your fingers to throw turnouts like you would if you were literally walking it on the real railroad, that to me is it keeps you in the moment. And the minute you have to deviate from that and go from complicated track work to a complicated panel and try to figure out which is the right toggle switch for that particular turnout, that just it takes me right out of it. If I were running a model of Penn Station, on the other hand, that would be appropriate because that's what Penn Station is like on the prototype, right? It's a big giant model board. You don't have guys walking around throwing turnouts in Penn Station. But at Mahoopany, guys are walking around throwing turnouts, you know what I mean? So I didn't want to turn it into Penn Station. So I mean that's a to-do to solve. I don't want to dispense with the beautiful Z-scale throw bars that he used there, which look just like what the prototype has. I need to, but because of that, there's not really a lot of material there to try to fashion a spring for. You know what I mean? So there may be some compromise involved there that I have yet to come up with. And I kind of like to do it before the next time I operate, but I got a couple of things to do as well during that period of time, so I can't guarantee it.
Well, what I like about this phase, Mike, is that we get to kind of switch from talking about concept, and all of the dirty construction that just finished up, to now we're talking about technique, that goes into building a model railroad.
Yeah,
And
actual model railroad building.
well, and what I would suggest to our listeners
They have
is,
to be sick of hearing about my addition.
well,
I
I
know I
suspect
am.
that everybody's ready for this part of the project, but I would suggest to our listeners that, you're now gonna gain the experience of, Mike's, 77 years of layout building, and all of the, evolution of those processes that have now become what they are. And, I know most of you, have never seen Mike's layout in person, but take my word for it. And I've seen many. It is, one of the top model railroads in the country. So I'm looking forward to, sharing some ideas with you, hearing how you're going to do this, talking about, how this all played out. And then, inevitably getting back to running trains and, hopefully, we were talking today, getting the main line down, and maybe in 6 months, we're back in operations. So
Yeah,
there's the
I honestly think that, and everybody asks me the same question, so I'll preface it with that. But I think the bench work's going to go very smoothly and quickly. The workshop's humming on all cylinders, the material's there, bench work with power drivers and all that goes together fairly quickly and easily. So I think in a few weeks I'll have the bench work up and be fooling around with cardboard and track on top of it. And that's what I can't wait to get doing, 'cause that's the actual final design.
Yep. So, we'll look forward to, the updates every month. And, folks, it's kind of exciting because you're now about to be taken through, every aspect of building a model railroad, everything from, design to bench work to track work, to electronics and scenery and structures and so on and so forth. So I'm really looking forward to it.
I think by now I've pretty much made all of the mistakes necessary to kind of know what I'm doing. We're going to find out.
Yep. My earthly body made another revolution around the sun about a week ago.
It's a good way to look at it. You survived another trip around the sun.
Yep. And so I my birthday falls 5 days after Christmas, and for many years, my birthday was kind of a forgotten thing, and
I
I
would
will
advise you
say
not to bring that up when you're talking to my wife, because her birthday is January 2nd, so
as I'm well aware,
she has very similar but much stronger feelings about it.
I think we had shared some sentiment about
Yep.
that at one point, but I have to say that my fiance goes well out of her way every year to make sure that my birthday is not forgotten, and just one of the many things that I love about her. But this year was no exception. We had a great birthday celebration, but at the risk of sounding a little bit like a kid, I asked for and received a Craftsman structure kit for my birthday, and we're not. Having just moved in here, we're not yet set up for me to be working on models of any kind, but we will be hopefully in the near future. But for years and years, I've been enamored with the Sierra West kits that Brett Gallant puts out, and they're all somewhat quirky, occasionally prototypically based. This one I thought had some unique lines. It's an O scale building, Mike. And
So this is something you're building strictly for the joy of building something.
it'll be built just as a diorama, and that's really kind of the situation that I'm in the for the foreseeable future, which is fine with me, because I can always go lend a hand when it comes to building bench work or pouring incorrectly mixed water or things like that.
I know what you need, though.
What's that?
An addition.
Oh my God. It's funny because that topic came up, and this is a large
With Tina,
house.
you mean?
And it was brushed off quickly because we're right up against the plot lines here, the setbacks. They really the only direction you could build out would be up, and that would be probably a little prohibitive in a neighborhood of two-story houses.
Right.
So I don't ever think that that's in the cards, but I'm very content with what I will have at my disposal, and this particular structure kit was a little near and dear to my heart anyway, because it was named after a good friend of mine, as well as Brett's, a guy by the name of Kevin O'Neill, who passed away a few years ago from cancer. He was just an incredible structure builder. He was a finished carpenter, Mike, and one day on a whim, he bought a fine scale miniature kit and built this thing and brought it around to a show. And a bunch of us were there and got a look at it. And we said, how come we don't know you? And how many years have you been doing this? And he said, this was the first one I ever built. And it was a contest quality model. In fact, it was
Sounds like
literally
the kind of guy
a
you want
contest
doing your
win.
finished carpentry.
Oh yeah, this guy was just his attention to detail was incredible. So unfortunately for now, the kit sits in a box. I do it will take a back seat to finishing my Millennium Falcon, which
But
is
that's sort of a serial kit in that, you can't do anything else on it until the next installment appears, right?
Well, and it turns out that I really kind of like that way of doing things, because one, my schedule is so busy that it would be difficult to devote more time to it than I could if I had the materials at hand. And two, it allows me to each month's subscription is the equivalent of about 2 or 3 hours work.
So
So
it's doable.
if I get a day to myself, I can do it in a day, or I can spread it out over the course of a couple of weeks.
When's the last time you had a day to yourself? I'm just asking.
No, and I can tell you exactly when. April 16th, 2011.
That's what I thought.
So yeah, which is fine. But the interesting thing with this Millennium Falcon, and it's folks, I would we'll put the link up on the Facebook page, but it's a kit that is distributed by a company called D'Agostini Model Space. And if you Google model-space.com, the website will come up, and they're all of their models are exquisite. What we're getting into here, Mike, and I think I talked about this a little on the previous podcast, is we're delving into weathering the Millennium Falcon. And so the airbrush has been broken out, and great pains have been taken to make sure that I'm moving at a slow pace to get this thing done right.
So are you weathering it as you build it?
Well, so it's think of it as a top half and a bottom half.
Okay.
And so the bottom half was completed first, and that involves all of the alloy metal superstructure, and then the skin of the ship, which is made out of plastic. So the detail on this is incredible. There are a lot of glue-on parts. And each month comes with four packages of material, as well as four books that not only take you through the instructions needed to build that month's subscription, but also a lot of background into the movie sets, different aspects of the movie. So in and of themselves, they're very interesting.
Would this format lend itself to model railroad craftsman kits?
Probably not, and the reason why is because the Craftsman kit manufacturers that are left, and their numbers are dwindling, are one person companies, and their
Oh.
goal is to get a complete kit designed, manufactured, packaged, and out the door
Right.
as quick as possible so that they can move on to the next kit. What,
Because it's small quantity runs.
sure, what
Yeah.
all of these manufacturers, and I felt the same way when I was doing it, can't stand is the
Production.
minimum wage work that goes into manufacturing these kits,
Right.
you know, the packaging, the counting of pieces. So you just want to get it done and move on.
Yep.
So for this company, I don't know where the company is headquartered in England, and they've got a US distributor, and I don't know where everything gets packaged, how it gets moved along. I know these packages are shipped from the United States, but
How many more installments, monthly installments, are ahead on it?
I believe there are seven more.
So really, you won't, if I heard you correctly, you won't be starting this Craftsman Structure Kit until the summer.
That's correct. I won't be starting it until I've gone from being engaged to being married.
Wow.
So, which is just fine because you know, on top of work, on top of moving, on top of you know, baseball starting up last night, you know, we're also smack dab in the middle of planning a wedding, and my fiance, God bless her, has done most of the heavy lifting.
Well, she would
But
be the female.
well, you know, she is like you. You know, she is a project manager. She's highly organized, and you know, that's a strength of hers. But I also, you know, want to make sure that you know, I'm doing as much as she needs me to do or wants me to do too. So,
Sure.
and I want to be involved anyway. So,
She's probably excellent at research.
yeah, and we've done a lot to this point to accommodate my moving in. Picture, if you will, you know, a house that's, you know, filled with furniture and three kids and, you know, all of their belongings and you know, all that personal stuff. And, you know, I'm moving in, you know, every personal belonging that I own, including, as I realized, a lot of clothes.
I went through some subset of that when Karen moved up here, but you know she was coming from a New York apartment, so basically, you know we brought her stuff up here, and my house just kind of opened its mouth and swallowed all of that whole and burped and said, "What else you got?"
You know, and you got Karen.
Right.
And speaking of which, I called you on the phone the other day, and you guys were smack dab in the middle of a Planet Fitness. So I congratulate you on your desire to build a little muscle, maybe go on the bodybuilding circuit, maybe join my UFC tours.
I mentioned this to my son on the phone today, and of course he started chortling because he remembers when, you know, when he was living here, and we thought, hey, you know, we should maybe try some weights and things. You know, we need to get toned up here. And we got some weights and we started, you know, doing it together, you know, just so it wouldn't be such an onerous kind of a thing to do. And we probably did it for, I don't know, 3, 4 weeks. And one day we just kind of looked at each other and concluded that we really hated it. I mean, really, really hated it. And I haven't done anything like that since, you know. So you're probably thinking, well, why the heck did you join a gym? Well, I'm not getting any younger despite my best efforts, and you don't want to be losing muscle mass. And you know, Karen and I are like the opposite in that she actually doesn't mind, you know, the weights and things like that. She hates aerobic activity, and aerobic stuff is what I don't mind doing. So the thought here is that maybe we can motivate one another to do what the other one needs, and it wouldn't probably happen if just one person was doing it on their own, you know what I mean? So we're just kind of doing what we can to maybe stave off the inevitable a little bit longer here.
It's difficult if two people are working out together and neither one of them likes it.
Well, that you
Because
proved that with
there
my
are
son, yes.
right, there are days where you're not gonna wanna do it, and there are gonna be days where she's not gonna wanna do it. And if you can motivate her and she can motivate you, you'll both get through it. I've worked out to DVDs, I've worked out in gyms, and it's kind of a what suits my fancy at any given time. There are days where I really like the concept of working out and having other people around who are also working out. I find that's motivational.
Sure.
I'm working with a, as you know, I'm working with a personal trainer, and it's in an incredibly friendly, motivational atmosphere.
Yes.
With a program that is geared specifically towards my needs. But you can get that, through your membership at Planet Fitness.
Absolutely. In
You can
fact,
get,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, I was just going to say, you can get that kind of personal plan developed for you.
Yeah, that was part of the attraction, and my buddy Mike Confalone actually was the guy that got me actually considering this, because he told me that when he really was dead set against doing this. He's like me, that he always has 1,000 things to do and that he'd rather be doing than that. But his wife talked him into it, and they both went. Similar kind of deal. And he said that he wasn't at all into it in the beginning, but he was surprised that after a relatively short time, say a couple of months, he noticed that all of his morning aches and pains were basically gone. That's a very attractive thing to me, you know?
It's an incredible side benefit.
Right.
You would think that, it would be just the opposite, that, you're
Well, I'll bet it
lifting
is in the
weights,
beginning.
you're exercise. Well, yeah, and honestly, a proper workout should leave you a little weak and a little sore. You should feel that, your muscles have worked. There are nights and days where, I leave that trainer, tonight being one of them. Today was my leg workout day, where, I've got to hold on to the hand railing to get down the steps,
Really?
because it's just, my legs aren't functioning. They're dead by the end of the thing. But I'll tell you what, I get up in the morning and my knees aren't achy. Tina notices it right away, because I don't, I'm not groaning when I'm getting up from a chair, or
Right.
I can move a little faster. And let's face it, I'm 56. You're 61, Mike.
No, I am going to be 63 in July.
So you're 61, and I think that it's not going to get any better if you don't do anything.
Well, that's exactly right. So we have a pact, and I said, you know what? We're going to do this for at least 3 months. We're going to go and do this for 3 months, and probably four. The idea would be to get to, in her case, gardening season, and be ready for it for once.
Well, and so here's what you'll find out. After you've gone for 3 weeks, it becomes a habit. And you will miss, if you have to miss a day for some reason, it will bother you, because you will, if you put that 3 weeks in, your body will start to show and feel the benefits of it. Now, what I like about the Planet Fitness, because you guys, on occasion will travel, is that they're everywhere.
Oh yeah, that's true. You can use other ones, huh?
Yeah, if you have the black card, in fact, actually, I believe it doesn't matter one way or the other, but I know for certain, because I do have the black card, that you can go to any Planet Fitness.
Oh, so you're a Planet Fitness member also.
Yes.
How many?
Yep.
Jesus, how many?
Seven. The number is seven, if you must know. No, I, you know, so it's worthwhile for me to keep the Planet Fitness membership because, you know, here's an example. My trainer is open Monday through Saturday. He works with a small clientele, and you know, they're you know, if he takes a day off, you know, because he's going away, I can go hop over at the Planet Fitness, you know, and get a workout in.
And it's really very cheap.
Yeah, you know, I pay $20 a month for the Black Card,
Yep.
but
And
you
the
can do
one
it
we're
for,
starting with is $10 a month.
yeah,
So,
$10 a month.
you know, it's pretty hard to argue with that.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, when I first got married, we joined a gym in Franklin, and I want to say it was like, you know, $68 a month,
Right.
you know, for the two of us. And you know, you wonder how these places, you know, at $10 a whack, stay in business. But honestly, you know, you go into a plant, the plant there, when I was in Bellingham, there were the two Planet Fitnesses, one in Milford, one in Franklin, were equidistant from me. And you go into either one at 5 o'clock at night, and there had to be 300 people in each one.
Jeez.
Crazy. You
And
know,
we
and
have the
they,
benefit of not having to go at peak times.
yep.
So they basically said, you know, if you come anywhere from 9 to like 4, very often you'll have the trainer all to yourself.
Yep. It's, you know, I've always said that model railroaders represent a cross section of society, but because it's a small hobby, you kind of see, you know, a lot of the people who, you know, may be living sedentary, less healthy lifestyles. And, you know, it's just easy to get yourself into a bad situation that, you know, you're eating poorly, you're not getting any exercise. You know, and we all go through periods in our life where, you know, it's difficult to do things the right way, but
Yeah, plus it's
boy.
winter, you know, it takes a lot more discipline to get out on the road in the winter than it does the other three seasons of the year. Now, I after you left, I went for my walk, and it actually wasn't bad today, but you know, we're heading right into the teeth of the
Yeah.
season when it becomes a lot more problematic. So, you know, we have our first our I guess it's when we go there to design to talk with the guy about what we're trying to achieve and to design a plan. And I guess we'll be starting, you know, as early as this weekend or probably first thing next week. So
Good,
stay
good.
tuned. You know, the next time we speak about this, I'll have been doing it for a month
Well,
and
I
we'll see if, you
guarantee
know, we'll
you,
see how it's going.
if you do what you're told and you stick with it, you are gonna feel sensational. You'll
Well, that's the other
feel.
thing. I really do need some input as to what to do, you know.
Sure, sure.
I walked into the place and it looked like there were 200 machines in there, and I just thought, yeah.
Well,
I need somebody to say, do this, now do this.
I think that can be a little intimidating if you don't have, well, even people that have been working out for years and years don't necessarily do it right, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to work with a personal trainer, because I wanted to make sure that I was doing it right and getting results. It's awful easy at our age, Mike, to get injured doing this.
Well, that's the other thing, you know, and I'm going to tell the guys that, you know, if I have any kind of an issue, it's that I tend towards tendinitis, you know what I mean? So
Yep.
you got to make sure that whatever we're doing has the, you know, the right kind of warm up for the exercise that we're doing, and I'm just hoping that, you know, what this will do will be to mitigate that, and that's really
Right.
what I'm trying to do.
So what you will find, and my trainer told me this because I had biceps tendonitis in my shoulder, was that the more muscle that you can build, the more that that's going to protect the tendons.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, you know, if you don't have a lot of muscle mass, then the stress is on the tendons and ligaments.
I know I've got less than I used to. When
Yeah.
Dave and I picked up that layout corner of Pittston Yard, and we had to like pick it up and over and to get it out of there, I thought, yeah, this is getting near the max of my capabilities here, and I thought that was a little disturbing. So, Here I am, I'm going to bulk up so I can do better model railroading. What do you think of that?
Excellent. I think you'll be a happier person and have a healthier life. Hey, two other quick topics we just wanted to touch on because we're getting a little long in the tooth here. I have a client that's actually just down the street from you, Mike, and it's allowed me to stop by a couple of times in my visits there. But one of the unique things that I found out, and we talk about, the Grafton Upton is a short line you can model. The Bay Colony Railroad, which is definitely a short line, although I guess from time to time in its existence, it would be considered a much bigger short line than the Grafton and Upton, although somewhat disjointed, is still running down in your neighborhood. And I saw a couple of unique locomotives. They've got a short line, short nose GP9. And then a high nose GP9.
Which has been there forever.
Has it
I
really?
mean, it runs, don't get me wrong, but I mean that high nose Jeep has been it's probably been here for 25 years. I mean, it's the, that's the loco that they had been using. The chop nose came from some other spot that they're no longer doing. That spot that you were on is the former Watupa branch of the New Haven, which went into Penn Central and Conrail, and it's got a very odd history in that it's actually I think there's three different parties that own portions of it. Mass Coastal owns some of it, the state owns some of it, Bay Colony owns a short segment of it, and I think Mass Coastal contracts with Bay Colony to operate over their portion of it so that they interchange with Mass Coastal down at the Y in New Bedford, and it's building materials for Dartmouth Building Supply. It's scrap for the scrap yard in Westport, and to my knowledge, although they used to get stuff by rail, I don't think Colonial Beverage is doing anything with rail now. So it's just basically two customers that are keeping that whole branch open.
I see. I see. Well, I mean, I actually, when I was down there this afternoon, I had the pleasure of watching a train do some switching. And, that always piques my interest. It makes for, an hour's drive to not be quite so tedious.
Especially the sweet sound of a 567 prime mover, huh?
Yeah, it's
Just
just got
sounds
that.
right to me.
That digging in kind of low growl sound that I think is very attractive to model railroaders. And it's interesting to note that it was the Bay Colony Railroad in Millis, Massachusetts, which is no longer there, that
Is that where the
I
chop nose came from, maybe?
no, there was a high nose there.
Okay.
That I believe is part of the Grafton and Upton now. And I don't know, they had a bunch of stuff kicking around. It's real kind of an eclectic mix. But
And they're also affiliated, you probably know this, with the Seminole Gulf in Florida.
yes, well, it was interesting to note that right before they left abandoned Millis, I had recorded all of the sound that we used for the Dick Elwell DVD. Just standing along the tracks one day there with a tape recorder, and taping, recording the this GP9 going back and forth, banging into boxcars and starting and stopping, but.
Tape recorders, remember those?
Oh yeah. So it's just another short line that from time to time, if I'm down there more, we may be talking about.
Yeah. It's always worth a visit, and in fact, when I go to the building materials place there to get something, I always swing over there and check out what's going on railroad-wise.
So we have another broadcast partner. A podcast partner, not a broadcast partner. However, and I'm going to take a picture of him and post it on Facebook. Very soon. He's actually sleeping behind me as we speak. He looks very content.
It's Max, isn't it?
No, it's actually so Max is Catherine's dog,
Oh, okay.
and is with Catherine. But we rescued a puppy back in June, and this guy is a lab boxer mix. And he's got the best disposition I have ever seen. He's been laying on this couch behind me, since we started recording, and hasn't made a peep.
Whose dog is he? Is he the family dog? Does he
He's
like
the
you? I mean, what? Whose dog is it? Usually,
he
usually a
he's
dog will
the
gravitate towards one party.
No, this and this is not the case with this dog. This dog loves everybody. So it is definitely a family dog.
Nice.
His name is Huey. We named him after the helicopter. We were looking for unique names, and Tina's dad was an Army helicopter test pilot.
It's a good dog name.
Yeah, so we chose Huey. The last topic on our list, Mike, is you wanted me to ask you about the Walther's order. You placed them before you describe, I'm guessing, what may have been an issue. I had forgotten completely that Walther's even existed.
Well, Walther's is still one of my main suppliers, and I've been ordering from them and through them for a long time, probably it's got to be close to 20 years, I would think, at this point. And I mean, people love to complain about everything, but they've been a pretty reliable supplier of mine. It took some doing to get set up with them originally, but they've been good to deal with. And the reason I kind of brought up the order was, I had gone from ordering from them, reasonably regularly, to ordering like nothing in the last 6 months. And the reason is I couldn't even think about anything related to ordering train stuff for the most part. You know what I mean? I was so focused on everything about the addition that, the catalogs would come in, and I mean, you just kind of look at it, yeah, that's nice, and toss it on the pile to be looked at, and then the next thing you know, there's the next month's coming in. You haven't even looked at the last one. So that's kind of what 2018 was like. So I had gotten a call from my rep there saying that some back orders had finally arrived, and you know how it is with back orders and advance orders on things. You could be a year later. You know what I mean? So sometimes more. So I had started an order in my cart just to fill in some turnout quantities that, like we had talked about earlier, I want to go into this thing with ample quantities of everything on hand. Plus, when you've been dealing with Walther's long enough, you know that every year in January and February they put all the track on sale. So if you're going to buy a bunch of it, that's the time to do it, So between the back orders and the additional track that I ordered and some other stuff that had been sitting in my cart, it was like $1,000 order.
Jeez, holy cow, they must have loved you.
Well, I mean, I looked at that and I thought, well, in the course of what you spend in a year, there was some pent up demand there. I'm not really sure when the next order will go in, but when it comes in, I'm going to have lots of cork, lots of track, lots of rail joiners, lots of turnouts, basically anything you can think of to get going and make a serious dent on this project.
Sure. Well,
All the
I think
other
we're all.
stuff, like if I'm ordering decoders and speakers and all that stuff for the install business, that's something that I'm basically direct with all the manufacturers on. I'm buying enough of that stuff that it doesn't make sense to do it through a distributor. But for the wide array of stuff that you need for general model railroading, it's nice to have a full line distributor like Walther's at your disposal.
Sure, of course it is. I think we've hit, boy, we were wondering this afternoon if we had enough to talk about.
We didn't want to get talked out in person. You notice
No,
I was
I
reluctant
know.
to talk with you.
We kind of put a moratorium on conversation.
Right. We just
leading up
kind
to the
of,
podcast.
we use gestures and grunts, basically.
We talk about, football and things like that.
We didn't mention football at all this afternoon.
No, and I think for the sake of our Patriot-hating listeners, we won't even go there. But I would leave it at this. Last weekend, the wild card weekend, and this weekend, the divisional game, playoff games, are to me the two best weekends of football all year long.
Yep.
So, whomever you root for, I hope you enjoy the games, folks, and we'll look forward to your updates in February, Mike. And thanks for bringing us up to speed tonight.
Yeah, but it's back to all trains all the time in 2019.
Nice. We look forward to it. All right, folks, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next month.
See you next month.